Okay, we are live from Mandalay Bay at Mix11 Conference with my distinguished guests, Scott Guthrie, a man who needs no introduction, Scott Guthrie. But what would you say you do here?
I just come and speak sometimes.
Okay, and to your side, John Papa. John, what would you say you do here?
I deliver the pizzas for the Papa John's delivery. No.
True story. Didn't you actually get crank called? They thought you were crank calling one time when you asked for a pizza and you said your name was John Papa?
I absolutely did, and they didn't believe me either.
So we have an hour with the goo. This is all about asking the goo, getting questions, whatever topics you have, favorite trends, fashion, whatever it happens to be. Send your questions. The way this works, send it to #CH9Live, #CH9Live, and we will get your questions answered. In fact, we have a warm-up question here. So Johnny Westlake asks, "Are there any significant improvements to Silverlight visual drawing speed? Complex pages take a second or two to show at the moment."
Yeah, each release we focus obviously on perf and in terms of speeding things up. So there's a bunch of performance improvements throughout the stack, both the graphics layer and so forth. Probably one of the biggest kind of changes that we're making with Silverlight 5 is we're taking some of the independent animation and composition work that we did for the phone with the first Windows Phone release and bringing it to the desktop. And one of the big advantages that brings is anytime you have interactivity, the actual animation is running off the UI thread. And what we typically see is a lot of people end up having to kind of, the more you put on the UI thread, the more you have to tune to make sure you're not stomping on your foot.
Right.
And that has a big win. And we've seen a lot of people that have sort of originally say, "Well, that sounds good. I don't know if I'd ever use it." But when they actually start building real apps with Silverlight 5, they go like, "Wow, I didn't realize what a big difference that would make." So that's probably one of the most significant ones.
Absolutely.
And then there's also improvements to kind of graphics acceleration, things like that as well.
And how about you mentioned the profiler, showed that off today. You want to talk about some of the things for people that do have that latency on startup, how they can use the profiler in their application to see where the actual bottlenecks versus perceived bottlenecks.
Yeah, one of the things I showed in the keynote was using the new profiler we have. And it's a pretty phenomenal profiler. There's actually a feature I forgot to show off this morning. I felt everyone's like, "Oh, it's got all these great features." There's more that isn't there. But one of the things that's nice about it is it basically allows you to run your app, see a timeline, typically 30 seconds or a minute if you want to capture some sequence of events. And it basically breaks down CPU, GPU, animations, image loads, network access, garbage collections, and basically allows you to highlight any region. And it'll kind of pinpoint, and there's lots of profilers out there, and we have ones for .NET in the past. But oftentimes, profilers just kind of give you a bunch of stuff. And it's sort of like reading from a phone book. And what exactly am I looking at?
Right.
And what we really tried to do with this profiler was to go to the next level of saying, "Okay, here's a bunch of data, but let's actually provide a first kind of cut analysis." Imagine an expert was sitting over your shoulder and could actually say, "Oh, this data indicates problems here, here, and here." And I think that's one of the things that I think as people start playing with a profile, they'll be most impressed with, is it kind of guides you to the problems and says, "Hey, you should check out this," or, "Hey, it looks like you're saturating the UI thread," or, "Hey, you're bouncing off the GPU when you shouldn't be." And I think that's the real special sauce in the profiler, is the
Sweet.
Fact that it's helping.
We've got some great sessions at Mix on both the profile for Windows Phone and the Silverlight here that people can watch online later too.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know the names of the sessions for people? And also, we're making all session recordings available online as well. So.
Put me on the spot. I believe Mike Cook is the speaker for one of the sessions, and Vibor is the speaker for the other. So you can check both those out.
Okay, great. So we have a couple more questions here. And keep them coming. Remember, send your questions to #CH9Live. If we can get that #CH9Live. And Soulless Swede, interesting name. What's the target date for SL5 to RTM? So we announced the beta today. What's the RTM? They want to lock you in on a date.
You can't
Go ahead.
wait. You can't wait.
Well, we're not announcing the specific day yet. We want to get a little closer to it before we sort of fixate on a particular date. What we've said is we'll ship by the end of the year, end of the
Okay.
calendar year. We had the Silverlight Firestarter event in December, which is kind of our first big disclosure of all the features. And that was kind of where we went end to end with lots and lots of demos. In the keynote today, we kind of showed a couple of highlights for media and for apps. And one of the things we said at the Firestarter was, "Hey, we're going to ship a beta the first half of the year. we just did that today.
Mm-hmm.
It's April. And we said, that is the first half of the year. And then we said, hey, we're going to ship the final RTM release the second half of the year. And what I can say is we're definitely on track for that.
Awesome.
But we haven't announced a physical, you know, like the actual date yet. And the reality is we're going to look for beta feedback. There's more, you know, perf tuning and stuff that we'll do. And so, you know, we'll kind of lock in on the exact date in a couple months.
And for some developers that don't know this, user voice, you all take, you know, it's all about, especially when you release a beta, it's all about getting people's feedback on using that. So you want to talk about kind of how you incorporate community feedback using user voice and some of the top features that you added to Silverlight 5 as a result of that feedback?
Yeah, I mean, in general, like one of the things I think the team's done a really good job of is, you know, trying to, you know, talk with customers, talk with developers. You know, events like this are invaluable to get feedback, even just hallway kind of feedback.
Right.
But one of the things we do process-wise is we do have this thing called user voice, where people can basically submit what they'd like the feature set of the next release to be. We do that not just for Silverlight. We do it for ASP.NET. We do it for, I think, C# and WPF and, you know, a bunch of other products as well. And, you know, we try pretty hard to look at, you know, what are people voting on and what have they suggested and, you know, we prioritize based on that.
And a lot of people use it. We get a ton of votes up there, really prioritize it. It helps us really focus.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, we have a question from Accordion Guy. question for Scott Guthrie. He doesn't refer to you as Scott Gu. Maybe you haven't met him yet. Okay, so he'll have a large accordion on. It's the only person carrying an accordion at Mix. Okay, so what sort of exercises did you do to get in that incredible 3D ripped physique?
Oh, I try to do at least 2,000 push-ups a morning, run a half-mile marathon usually, or not a half-mile, a half-marathon. I might run a half-mile marathon now every day.
A half-mile marathon. I frankly couldn't make that.
That would wipe me out.
The nice thing is the people that put together that demo helped also tremendously in my workout and contributed towards those amazing six-pack abs.
So if the word message is you use Silverlight 3D, you will also look like Scott.
Yeah, oh, is that the message? Yeah, okay. So we have more questions. Keep them coming. So Christo BG asks, are we going to see the phone profiling tools for the full Silverlight?
Good question. I mean, it's we don't have an exact time frame for that yet. It's certainly something we're looking at. We've been pretty heads down just on getting the Mango tools out. And so as that team kind of comes up for air, then I think we'll look at how do we bring some of those profiling tools to other form factors as well.
Okay.
We do have a code profiler, which I think is being shown off in the Silverlight 5 perf talk at Mix. And so there is a profiler you can use with Silverlight 5 today. And I think you're going to show – are you doing that talk? Or?
No, Mike Cook.
Oh, Mike Cook is
doing that talk, yeah.
But I think we're going to show off using the profiler with the full Silverlight 5 as well.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Very cool. John Kasser asks, where's the best place to submit suggestions for Entity Framework? So I do know that Entity Framework has a blog, and they regularly get 80 to 100 comments on especially things like code first, programming, mm-hmm. and so forth. But putting you guys on the spot, do you guys know where Entity Framework, other than, say, look at the Entity Framework blog?
I'm not sure if there's a user voice site for that particular team at this point.
I'm trying to I know they've talked about creating one. You certainly go to the ADO.team blog or send me an email, and I'll forward it to the team.
Okay, so. And your email for everyone that doesn't have it automatically filling in an Outlook.
Dan.Fernandez at Microsoft. Yeah.
ScottGu@Microsoft.com.
So. Okay, perfect. There you go. ScottGu@Microsoft.com. Send your pictures now. Vivid Tweets asks, I'm not a developer but want to create apps. How easy is it to create apps for WB7? Is there any software like VB to do so?
Yeah, there is. I mean, basically, you know, what I'd say is creating apps. There's kind of multiple levels of creating apps for a phone. You know, at a base level, if you want to basically create an app and run it on the phone, and you know, have some basic interactivity and buttons and things like that, I think our phone tools that are free. Make it pretty easy to do that. One of the things I didn't mention in the keynote but it's worth calling out is VB support is fully baked into the Mango tools. And so you can use VB or C# with Mango to build your apps. And we have a forms designer so you can drag and drop controls, double click, write event handlers, just like you would with, say, VB Desktop today.
Now, I got to plug a series, actually. We did, Bob Tabor did a series called Windows Phone 7 for Absolute Beginners.
That would be the place to go, then. Yeah.
And basically, that series, it is using C#, but the idea is, how do we show somebody the basics of programming? So they don't know what a variable is. They don't know, like, how to do for loops.
Yep.
And walks through how to build an application. It's just a very basic application, but using Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a 20 or 30-part video series. So very step-by-step. Just search for Windows Phone 7 for Absolute Beginners. And that series has been pretty popular. And that's on channel9.mcn.com. So next question here. Aranark, I hope I got that name right. Can one use SL5 3D features to create games or the model... or the models are static? So SL5 3D features, is this a game platform?
That's a good question. So the 3D APIs are basically a subset of the full XNA APIs, and XNA is kind of our game framework. For size reasons, we pretty much just included the graphic APIs of XNA in Silverlight, but that includes kind of vertex shaders and,
yep,
the
meshes,
whole nine yards, meshes and all that. We don't include some of the physics engines and sound and kind of media content type pipeline stuff that XNA has.
Okay.
You can build that on top of what we have inside Silverlight 5, and
mm-hmm.
so you certainly could build games with it. You know, we're not necessarily positioning the 3D API, though, specifically for games, although it's certainly possible to do it. In the same way you could build games with Silverlight or HTML or WPF or anything else.
Right.
But you know, we're more focusing a little bit on, so I'd say, information visualization. But they're full functional 3D mm-hmm. APIs that are hardware accelerated that have a lot of power, so you could certainly use them for game scenarios too.
Cool.
Sure.
You know, one thing I think that was mentioned, actually maybe I don't want to break myself into jail before I say that. So, but K1, see, that nice little thing in the back of my mind said, K1, support for multiple sound cards, playing two or more streams to two or more sound cards at the same time. So if you needed to do that, is there a way to be able to get that? It sounds like a low-level sound API where you're actually able to control the buffer to different streams.
I don't think we support the ability to do that.
Yeah.
We do. I mean, we do with Silverlight 5 have a what we call P-invoke support, which allows you to call native Win32 APIs or COM APIs on Windows when you're running out of browser.
Okay.
And so you might be able to. I actually don't know the sound APIs well enough in Win32 to know.
It should be able to if you go that route, yeah, but there's nothing direct.
There's no direct high-level API that we have that supports that.
Okay, so there's your answer. Try P-invoke and play with the Win32 APIs. So Dinesh Mandy asks, how much the 3D API is capable of? What can we do and when and we cannot do? So basically, what are the capabilities? Where would you say, what are the target scenarios, if you will, for what the 3D API can do?
Well, as Scott mentioned, it's a subset of the full XNA API, so you've got a lot of those features in there for the visualizations, but we're really focusing on the visualization side, and it's really low level, so you can really build upon what you want. I've seen some amazing things from like some of our partners to create some things that didn't natively come out of Silverlight with the 3D API, but they've been able to do some really good walkthroughs, like the virtual tour that we showed today in the keynote.
Do you want to talk about that app in case people, you know, maybe they're watching and didn't see it, kind of just talk about the internals, how
sure.
it's all built?
Sure, yeah. So the application we showed today in the keynote is a house builder application. And basically, it's just Silverlight 3D APIs. We used the popular, I think it's the Collada modeling tool that's out there. So we loaded the Collada models inside of Silverlight very simply, puts everything in there, offloaded everything off to the GPU with it, uses the vertex shaders and the meshes. It's all running really good. And the great thing about that was those machines we were running on weren't very fast. I mean, they were 4 gig of RAM, 2.8 gigahertz processors, you know, with a standard video card, and they were flying along. So it was a pretty nice experience to not have to go out and buy a supercomputer to run this 3D animations.
Sure. Cool. Keep your questions coming. Just a reminder here, we are at CH9 Live, pound CH9 Live. Keep forgetting pound CH9 Live. Get your questions answered by Scott Gu and John Papa. So Jay Villaro asks, will WP7 Silverlight version be increased? Will it be more like version 4 or 5 or something in between? So Silverlight on Windows Phone, what's the version and kind of how does it compare since you talked about Silverlight 5? Where's the feature set kind of start end in terms of those?
Yeah, well, I mean, from a time frame perspective, basically our goal is to snap each version of keep all the versions in sync. Mm-hmm. But there are different products ship on different releases, and so that's not always exactly possible. And so the version of Silverlight that was in the first release of Windows Phone was kind of the Silverlight 3 Plus kind of feature set. It wasn't the full Silverlight 4. And that was because Silverlight 4 and the timeline for Silverlight 3 for Phone didn't completely line up. With Mango, basically, we have the full Silverlight 4 code base brought forward onto Mango, which is the new release of Windows Phone.
Okay.
And there'll be probably a handful of 5 features that make it in as well. Then the release of the phone after Mango will have all the Silverlight 5 features in it.
Okay.
So we're definitely committed to keeping them in sync.
What about features from the phone being moved back into Silverlight 5? Do you find like, hey, we need to build this, but this is a good scenario, maybe sensors or whatever it happens to be, things that are phone that can apply to PC as well?
Certainly, like the compositor work that we've done in Silverlight 5 and the independent animation work that we've done in Silverlight 5, those were both directly, I wouldn't even say inspired, I think it was actually the same code we used on the phone. And so, absolutely, it's kind of each project that we work on, we do co-chairing in different ways.
Okay, cool. So I think we just answered the Jay Valaro question. So N. Pendlington asks, will the emulator persist isolated storage files with the Mango update to the tools? So this is a classic. I write, I save my thing on F5. It writes the data, but now next time I F5, I'm losing the data. Do you all happen to know the answer to that?
I believe when you're running it, as long as you don't stop the emulator with it, it's going to persist the data.
Yeah,
right, if you stop the emulator,
but I think
if you
stop the app, I think it would. Is it not?
I think if you stop the app and restart the app, it'll persist the isolated storage. If you stop the emulator, probably doesn't.
And actually, we should talk about some of the really cool stuff going on in the emulator tools. You wanna, maybe people didn't hear that,
sure.
or just talk about some of the things for the location emulation and some of the, gestures in the accelerometer, because that's so cool.
Yeah, well, one of the things we added to the tools that I showed off this morning for Mango is accelerometer support, so you can actually simulate, shaking or moving your device around. So for games in particular, that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also are adding GPS simulation. And so you can bring up a map next to your app, and you can move around the map, and your app will think it's wherever you've pinpointed on the map. And so it makes it a lot easier to test applications and build them without having to actually deploy to a real device and either shake it or walk around town trying it out.
Yeah, I remember trying to do some of the driving things we were doing with the Canon, just trying to simulate and emulate some of those features.
Yeah.
It was not pretty trying to basically almost do like a recording of accelerometer and then playing it back. And just being able to drag and drop is wonderful. Sir Breck asks, the current Silverlight printing API is still very basic. Are there any improvements in the pipeline concerning this?
Yeah, definitely. One of the features that we're adding with Silverlight 5 is support for vector printing, which kind of basically gives you much more fine-grained control over printing. I don't know if you want to maybe talk to some of the new...
Yeah, one way I always talk about with people is, other than being more fine-grained and you can do the vectors, obviously, for people who are more end users, too, it's nice where you can look at an object and you can actually zoom in and stretch and, it'll pull out with you. And it's also much better on memory performance. So we've had some complaints in the past about, I want to print a large document, it takes much memory, it's taking a long time to spool. It's actually faster to spool to the printer, and it's faster to print and takes much less memory now.
Cool. Fremi Company asks, I hope I'm getting these names right.
These names are
otherwise,
great.
My apologies. Is there any communication between Silverlight and IE team? Both made huge progress on perfs. I wonder if they shared experience. So how do you kind of work with the different teams inside Microsoft, like the IE team and so forth?
Yeah, well, we do. We have pretty close communication on a number of levels. Obviously, we're both built on top of, on the desktop Windows and on the phone, on the same phone OS. And so we do quite a bit of, it's less code sharing per se, but typically, occasionally we'll share algorithms, certainly compare experiences and kind of best practices. And, we provide them some suggestions as they're porting IE9 to the phone. They, in turn, actually provide us some suggestions on input handling and a few other things. And so, there's a good communication between them. Also, with Silverlight 5, we're taking advantage of IE9's new graphic acceleration capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a new API called Surface Presenter that basically plugins can integrate with.
Oh, interesting.
Flash is doing it too, and with Silverlight 5 beta, we're doing it as well.
Nice. Now, some of the other stuff, in terms of integration, because you know the list of things Scott Gu owns is quite large. Just to put you on the spot, how many? Because I remember so much of the demo server side, ASP.NET, having HTML5 integration. So, kind of, what's the recap? And one of the interesting things was the use of Modernizer.
Yep.
And actually, do you want to talk kind of quickly on how you all are using HTML5 on the server side?
Yeah. Well, day one keynote. Yeah, so I basically did two keynotes: day two, which is today, and day one, which is yesterday. So a lot of keynotes this week, a lot of demos. it's over. Day one yesterday was kind of server focused for me, and we basically did four demos in my keynote. One of them we showed off was ASP.NET MVC3 and the new tooling update that we released yesterday for it, and then we did two using WebMatrix as well as Orchard, which is our kind of application framework. And so one of the things we added with the MVC tooling update yesterday was better built-in support for HTML5 within ASP.NET projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so as part of that, when you do a new MVC3 application, there's a nice little use HTML5 semantic markup element that you can check.
Right.
It's on by default with SP1, because SP1 actually has HTML5 IntelliSense. I think it's off if you don't have SP1 by default, but you can check it anyway. And basically that uses semantic HTML5 elements like header, footer, section, nav, etc.
Right.
And it also includes latest versions of jQuery, jQuery UI, jQuery validation, as well as the Modernizer library. And Modernizer is a great open source library. Paul Irish helps drive it. It does a couple things. One is it provides an API so that you as a developer can check in JavaScript to see whether or not a particular HTML5 capability is supported in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
It's different browsers sort of support different subsets.
Is on the JavaScript side, though, so it basically does a sniff, or how does it actually work? Is it on server side?
It's actually client side, so you use Modernizer on the client. But basically, it doesn't maintain like a browser caps file. It basically unobtrusively tests that actual feature in the browser, and
mm-hmm.
depending on whether it returns null or not, will actually tell you. But you can basically say, you know, if Canvas is supported, and it'll say true or false. And so it can help you as you kind of, if you want to light up capabilities based on the browser, you can check for that. The other thing it does provide, which is kind of nice, is it allows you to use HTML5 CSS styling for tags like header, footer, section.
Right, right.
On older browsers that don't support that.
In your code, and then how does it know, like, because it's happening on the client, so... Does it do a callback to your code to send the right HTML down?
No, basically what you can do is you can use, for example, like the standard ASP.NET application template uses header and footer and has sections in it.
Right.
So those are tags, those are new HTML5 elements, so it's bracket header. And what you can do is you just go in your CSS file and you just style the header like you would with standard CSS,
mm-hmm.
Like you would for an HTML5 browser. And then what Modernizer does is you just add a script reference in your page. It'll say, like, hey, if it's IE6, it actually writes a little bit of JavaScript that allows that CSS to be applied. And it's a bit of a hack to make the browser detect it, but it allows you to effectively start using semantic HTML5 immediately, style it just like you would with a standard HTML5 browser, but not sacrifice broad reach. It's not going to give you capabilities like Canvas or SVG or anything like that, but it does allow you to start using more semantic markup.
Okay.
And style it consistently.
So I guess the point is, you as a developer don't have to worry about like building the if this browser then this Modernizer will kind of take care of that for you.
Yeah, as much as it can. There's limits in terms of what you can, but it's a pretty cool library, and you know a lot of people that are trying to use they're using HTML5 today are taking advantage of it, and so we said, right, why not add it by default into the project template?
Yeah, so how do you go about making a decision? Because you're now including an open source project in MVC, and that, mm-hmm. like, how do you go about choosing, you know, because in some point you're choosing what libraries to go in. jQuery obviously makes sense, because I feel like there's such a big movement around jQuery, but Modernizer, how's it going inside? You guys flipping a coin, throwing darts, or what's the...
Well, you know, the funny thing, you know, we generally look for, you know, what are kind of libraries that we really like. From a characteristic perspective, you know, they don't have to be super popular. Like when we started using jQuery, jQuery was definitely on the rise when we announced that we were going to start shipping it. But it was, you know, we started shipping it about 2 years ago. And
right.
It was before jQuery was, I'd say, huge. Now jQuery is sort of a brain-dead obvious thing to have included. I'd say it was kind of on the ascendancy. You know, prototype at that point was probably still more popular, more commonly used than jQuery at the time. But we kind of liked jQuery. It was really tight. It was small. It was very focused. And we thought it integrated nicely with ASP.NET. And that's why we chose jQuery. And it turned out to be a good decision because jQuery got more and more popular. And
you all are even contributing to it as well.
Yeah,
some of the data template work and stuff like that.
But yeah, I mean, we've gotten to the point where, you know, the very first time we wanted to ship open source, you know, with a commercial product that makes a lot of money.
How did you get past the lawyers?
Carefully. The lawyers love me. They always say, like, oh, when your name flies on our phone, we always get butterflies in our stomach.
Nice.
Generally, you know, I have a really good legal team and that supports me. And generally, kind of what I ask them is, say, hey, business-wise, here's kind of what we'd like to do. Can you help me find a way to do it? And, jQuery and other things, they were able to kind of say, oh, okay, if we do this license and if we do it this way, and we do this scrub, then we can do it. And we've got to the point where, you know, for including Modernizer, I think it was about 10 days from the point we said we'd like to ship it to the point that we got the legal thumbs up to do so. And so we've gotten it down to kind of a little bit of a science.
Sweet. Okay. So I've been asking a lot of questions, but of course, it's all about you. #CH9 live. Keep those questions coming, and we'll go back to the questions here. Shayus asks, will I be able to create a background app to send info to the cloud on a schedule interval? So kind of background, maybe this is almost like a, it could apply to Windows Phone as well,
right.
Background app to send data to, on an interval.
You can pull, but I don't know if you can send.
Yeah.
What if you had a timer that was just sending information on a tick?
That could be, I'm not sure.
I don't think we allow you, I got to check, because the OS allows you, that's why I'm confused. Mm-hmm. I know the OS allows it, but
right.
I don't think right now we allow third-party apps to run continuously in the background, except for certain scenarios like media and playing and things like that. Could be wrong, though.
We've got Joe on later, too.
Yeah.
We will put him on the spot.
There's a seed question right there.
Yeah.
Great. But that is a good question, actually.
Yeah.
I want to know the answer. K1 asks, can I use Silverlight 5 Trick Play to slow down a playing song, not a video, so I can both pitch up and down a song? So this is almost auto-tuning playing a song, is that possible?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's the same media element control, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. That Joe G asks, with socket support in Mango, can all ports be used, or is there a limited port range that is usable?
Isn't it the same port range that we use with Silverlight as well? I think there's only a range of 32 open ports. I could be wrong in that, though, but I thought it was the same port range.
I think it's actually more open than that.
Is it more open?
But I'm not 100% sure. I think it's. Send us mail, we can find out. I think it's a pretty broad port range because I know we're using like IRC and chat and a bunch of other stuff.
That's true. Yeah.
So I do know it's we do support more than just a few ports.
We can easily find out though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something for us to play with the Mango release to find out. Another question, Jeff Daly asks, any way to get around the Silverlight TCP port restriction 405? Man, this is a specific one, so you have to answer this correctly or we will kick you off stage. Any way to get around the Silverlight TCP port restriction 4502 to 4532 when connecting to a trusted socket location?
When we were just talking about that port range that I couldn't remember, so
There
we go. If you're running in full trust, I believe you can do that. So if you're running the full trust modes that we support in Silverlight 5. But I don't think so otherwise, though.
So full trust for Silverlight 5, the answer is yes.
Right. Without full trust, I'm not sure you can go beyond that
range. I
think
for security reasons, we do limit you to a range. With Silverlight 5, we do allow you to specify full trust now both outside the browser as well as inside the browser.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So
the inside the browser
still
is typically
inside the browser, and you still get full trust.
You do, but
so,
but
so it, are there, what are the limitations? I guess
it basically needs to be set at group policy level. So it's mostly for enterprises that want to allow a specific scenario, and they can allow full trust on an app on an app by app basis. Generally, you want to be very careful with full trust because it is full trust. And so that's why we don't just allow consumers to easily flip into that mode.
Right.
It's typically more kind of for an enterprise.
Yeah, you can access a hard drive, you can access USB ports, you can do a lot of things.
You've got to be very careful with it.
It's controlled scenarios, for lack of a better word.
It's full trust.
Yes. It's full trust, yeah.
When you say it that way, it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I like it when you say it's loaded.
You can never run system, so you're not full trust, but you're full user trust.
Okay.
So you are user mode.
And are there any restrictions? I mean, I'm p-invoking there. It's the same as add a browser full trust, right? There's no.
Yeah.
If
you're running full trust, you're still running under a user account, so you're not an admin. But yeah, you can. You know, full trust inside the browser does allow you to do p-invokes and.
You can do multi windows outside the browser. Yep. You can do HTML control.
Yep. Inside the browser. Yeah.
Okay.
We also have a session on that here tomorrow. Nick Kramer. Is doing a session.
Look at you. I love
it. Goes deep into that.
Plug. Do you remember the name of the session?
Advanced Silverlight 5. That's what it was.
Yeah, there you go.
But what's the session code?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, jeez.
You got
fail,
me there.
Fail. Back to our questions here. Poor John. He pulls something out of a hat.
I know.
You just have to.
The keynote's over.
You don't know the session code. Just get off the stage.
It's all downhill. The keynote's over. I'm ready.
The keynote is over, and it's nice that you're drinking. That's great. Adam Taub asks, along with the new Entity Framework release, will we be seeing a new RIA Services release?
Believe.
Yes, actually, the resources team had a late announcement, which we didn't have a place to put in here, so we did it in our Silverlight boot camp a couple days ago. That I had. They came up here and they announced some new features are putting in for Silverlight with RIA services. And one of those features is they will be supporting Entity Framework code first very soon. So.
Ooh, all right.
That was a surprise.
Very soon.
It was very late.
Do you know when very soon? No, they're not saying anything.
I'm not going to put them on the spot.
Yeah, okay, good. It's that thing in the back of your mind saying, maybe don't say that.
During my lifetime. How's that sound?
Well, you don't know what's going to happen today, John. Toes J asks, MVC3, how can you dynamically load partial views depending on the content of a property in your model ef.codefirst, say a list of T? So you want to dynamically load a partial view depending on the content of a property in your model. So I'm trying to think of a good example here.
Yeah,
so maybe something is, you know, is admin true, and then I'm...
Yeah, there's a couple scenarios there, you know, where that makes sense. One is, is admin. The other thing is you know, kind of logically, if you're coming from like a Silverlight background or WPF background, you know, we have this concept of data templates, which I guess is new to Silverlight 5. So maybe if you're coming from a WPF background and you're using Silverlight 5, then you might be familiar with data templates, but which is kind of a way you can do data binding, and we can dynamically load the template depending on the type. And so when you say, I want to bind a different partial based on I list of T, you might be thinking, hey, if it's a person object versus a motorcycle object in the list,
right,
I guess it would still be of T. But anyway, so with MVC, you can definitely write code to say if of a specific type, HTML.partial, and it'll dynamically load the right partial. You can also use what are called display templates or editor templates.
Okay.
And the way those work is you basically just give the property or the object value, and then it'll look inside a display templates or editor templates folder inside your project to actually dynamically pick the right template based on the type name.
Okay.
And that's kind of useful where if you don't want to have to write code explicitly to pick, you can actually just say, oh, here's how to render a person object, or here's how to render a date time, versus here's how to render a string, or here's how to render a motorcycle object.
And you could also reuse those across pages, because once you have a template for, you know, if I'm using the motorcycle on the detail or the summary page or whatever it happens to be, you can kind of reuse it that way.
Yeah, the nice thing about templates is you can put them, the editor templates and display templates, you can put them under, in your views folder. Typically, let's say you have a product controller. You'd have views, products, and then you put your view templates within there. You can put a subfolder, which is editor templates or display templates, under the products folder. And those templates will just apply to the products controller. But there's also a shared folder. And so if you put an editor templates or a display templates folder underneath that, and you put the template in there, it'll apply to all controllers inside your app. So,
okay.
So you can choose the level of granularity.
Very cool. All right, so the questions keep on coming. And just a reminder, #CH9 live, get your question answered, get your horoscope from Scott Guthrie and John Papa directly. Ashithraj asks, will there be automated testing tools for Silverlight 5 and how to do load testing of Silverlight 5 apps? So automated testing, load testing, Silverlight 5?
The coded UI stuff that we showed back in December, that will allow you to do automated UI testing for Silverlight applications. You can use that. I believe it's, and I'm going to get the name wrong, Visual Studio Feature Pack.
Feature Pack.
Two, I think?
Yeah.
I think it was two. I'd have to check it out. But that will do automated UI testing. So you can actually test like what the users are typing in, make sure the values are coming back okay.
That actually works with Silverlight 4 today.
Yes, it works with Silverlight 4 now.
And for people who aren't familiar with this, you can it's the model where I have the app and it's recording all the steps I take, the button click, I'm on the text box, I break validation, I fix validation, I click submit, and it'll play those back.
And you can test failure conditions or positive conditions, and it generates the actual unit testing code for you, which is great. So you can run it, make it all green or red.
So what about load testing? You know, there's obviously some for media like, hey, we're going to have a keynote and we got to make sure the media streams and all the stuff on the smooth streaming side as well, and just the regular app load testing for websites. What do you all recommend and have you seen in real world apps?
For load testing websites, you mean?
For a Silverlight application or for streaming, because I think those are kind of probably have different unique needs.
Sure.
For testing that?
Yeah,
like concurrent users and those sort of things.
Streaming's a little hard in the sense of to test. Mostly because typically to be able to successfully kind of do a live streaming event or even a heavy used video on demand or pre-recorded event, typically most of your load is going to be handled by the content delivery network or CDN.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's that many requests going back to your origin server, you're kind of dead, in the sense of, for something like the Olympics or March Madness.
Sure.
You know, we might have 9 or 100,000 or a million people concurrently watching it. Something, if they're all pulling, multi-megabyte chunks from your web server, there's not enough network pipe in your origin server to handle that. And so, what a content delivery network lets you do is cache the different chunks of video. Literally what we call on the edge. So basically in servers that are close to where people are. And so if you're watching this live, for example, you're not actually hitting our web server when you're watching this event. Something's hitting our web server. The first person's hitting our web server, but then the content delivery network will actually cache it at a server near where you are. And so if you're watching this from the UK, it's going to be the video is going to be served off of a server in the UK.
Okay.
And the benefit with that is you're not having to pull as much traffic across the internet, and it basically means that you can distribute the load across more servers, and that allows you to scale up your event much better. And one of the things that we've kind of pioneered with smooth streaming in Silverlight has been, how do you actually kind of integrate your consumption with that kind of content delivery? We use HTTP. We were kind of one of the first media streamers to really embrace HTTP in a big way. And that's kind of allowed us to do some of the big events that we have.
Now, people say you embrace HTTP, and can you kind of step further just so that they understand? Obviously, I know like the breaking of a block and how you get that really nice fast forward and seek and stuff like that. But for people that maybe don't know what you mean by embracing HTTP,
well, if you look at traditional streaming, take Windows Media Server, which we had several years ago. It did actually work over HTTP. I mean, kind of think of it more like sockets tunneled over HTTP.
Okay.
In some ways, I mean, that's kind of a one-level way to describe it. And so the actual, the typical model would be you'd have 10,000 people connecting as sort of sockets, and they're each getting a separate stream and watching it from that perspective.
Right.
And there was a way to do caching, and there was a way to do kind of distributed load, but it kind of was at a protocol level more like a socket as opposed to an HTTP packet load or an HTTP chunk. And what we've done with HTTP Smooth Streaming was to basically say, each part of the video is an HTTP request, meaning you could actually go in a browser, type in a very long URL that we create, and it would just download that particular file. And the benefit of that is because we just treat it like HTTP, any proxy cache server in between us will cache it just like it would cache an image or cache an HTML page.
Oh, great, great.
And that also gives us the ability from a networking perspective to leverage a lot of the existing networking infrastructures that like people like Akamai and Level 3 and Limelight have, mm-hmm. which are edge delivery networks. And so that, yeah, that's basically how we do it, is we break up the video into lots of little HTTP files.
Huge video broken into thousands of files, and then you just, I guess, have the manifest, if you will, that tells you what files to play at what time.
So really this event that people are watching live, or if they're watching it later, basically think of it as you download, the Silverlight player downloads an XML file, and the XML file effectively identifies, here are all the chunks in sequence to watch this video. And then what we do, which is kind of the extra special sauce, if you will, is for each chunk, we might say, here's an HD version of the chunk, here's a 1 megabit version of the chunk, here's a 500 megabit version of the chunk, here's a 256 kilobit chunk. And then we can actually detect both in terms of what the client's capable of. Mm-hmm. So if it's on a phone, we'll say, hey, it doesn't have a screen that can play an HD chunk, so dial it down. Or if the network is pretty slow, we'll actually dynamically vary the bit rate and which chunk we grab for each one of those segments, depending on what we think the network and the CPU can actually handle.
And that's the smooth of the smooth streaming,
the smooth, right? Part of, yeah. And it's basically an adaptive algorithm, and so we can kind of dial up the quality or dial down the quality depending on what's happening. And that ability to do that and then integrate with CDNs is kind of something we kind of pioneered and I think has kind of enabled us to use Silverlight for some of the biggest events and have really great quality.
So I'm going to make a gross generalization and say, on smooth streaming, if you're using a CDN, really, so long as the CDN is up, your stuff is going to be up, right? Because in some ways, you kind of have to rely on the CDN to be able to deliver your videos. If everything's mm-hmm. over HTTP, you don't need to test the CDN. That's what the CDN does. And if they fail, well. That's
kind of, yeah. I mean, the media,
you love it when I do gross generalizations.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in media. In general, you know, you typically, for like a live event, you do want to do a lot of testing.
Sure, sure.
CDNs typically do have good diagnostics, and so they can tell you, what the fail rate is and things like that. But conceptually, yes, you're right.
Okay, sure, sure. All right, we have more questions via Twitter, of course. MV Sarah High asks, tile notifications go off once we visit the app. It won't stay there if we don't read the emails. Any update in Mango?
I haven't tested that yet on the new phone.
I haven't either, so
OS, yeah.
This would be a great question. We can save this for Joe Belfiore and put him on the spot, and I'm sure he will beads of sweat will start to form. It'll be great. Brian Henderson asks, wow, at John Papa and at Scott Gu on at Channel 9, almost an hour, and no one has asked about MVVM support in Silverlight 5. So let's talk about MVVM support. Laurent should be happy, right?
He should be. And he'll be on here later today, too.
Yeah,
Another little plug. But, we've got a lot of MVVM support in Silverlight 5. We showed a couple things today. I didn't mention too much about it in the keynote, but the implicit data templates help support that as well. There's another feature called relative source find ancestor binding. It's brought over from WPF, I believe. Yep. Helps support MVVM. We've got custom markup extensions, which basically allow you to run any code you want from custom XAML. So you can put that in there as well. We've got a lot of nice features in Silverlight 5 with MVVM.
All right, so question. Hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot. Well, actually, I always am.
You are, yes.
Question. Windows Phone 7 Mango support for MVVM.
Yeah, absolutely. I've written a couple apps, actually, doing quite a bit with MVVM with Windows Phone, and the future support it's going to have there as well. They're not going to have custom markup, I don't believe, or the relative source in this version because that's Silverlight 5, but there's quite a bit in there.
Okay, cool. Zayjun asks, about Zap deploy to WP7 devices. When using VS2010 to deploy, ISO store is not cleared. When using application deployment, it is.
I think that was in response to that previous question.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So that's a good clarification.
There you go.
Good.
See, I love it when they answer the question.
I like real time. We don't have to be here. We can just ask questions
exactly.
And answer.
Can somebody answer this one? It's a hard one. Greeting SC asks, is a new version of WCF RIA services going to be released? So we did talk about this. That works with the new EF4 DB context.
I assume they're referring to the EF code first DB context that came out. So that's going to be supported. I think they're calling it Resources Service Pack 2.
Yeah.
I think it's the title. Yeah.
I had details on that, which was released this week.
Yeah.
Okay. And Obi-Wan 007. Will Mango SQL Engine support Entity Framework code first table creation?
So he's a Jedi and a secret agent.
I know. British secret agent.
I like that.
I like it. The Mango SQL Engine doesn't support Entity Framework. It actually uses a link to SQL API.
Link to SQL, yeah, baby. What's old is new.
I know it uses it uses a pretty similar model to code first in the sense that you define your models in code, and then there's an API for doing table creation, things like that. So conceptually, your answer is yes. You can use kind of mostly POCO models for that.
The nice thing about it is it's really simple and easy to use. And you're on a phone; you don't want a full-fledged massive database either, so it's really nice API to get to.
Yeah, so where do you guys see as like where to draw the line with data applications? Because there's always, you know, you can sync data to the cloud, you have your local storage. What's kind of the sweet spot? Like, when should I be using isolated storage versus database, structured, semi-structured versus cloud? So we have three friends to play with: cloud, semi-structured, isolated storage, and database. When do you use which?
And never sometimes. So.
And never. Okay.
No, there's always the answer is always the famous answer of it depends.
Okay.
You know, the kind of application you're building. I mean, isolated storage is obviously great for when it depends how much data you're pulling down. If you're pulling down a lot of data, it's going to be reused over and over again. It's very static. You pull stuff in. Isolated storage is nice as a cache in a certain sort of way to reload information quickly, especially if you do you can use JSON serialization with it as well. But if you're going to do like a full medical application on your phone and store all your patient information and doctors and all that, I don't know if I'd put everything into like an ISO store. That's where I'd look more towards more dynamic information coming across from maybe the cloud or from some kind of a RESTful service in some way.
Okay. Anything you want to add to that?
Everything he said. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I like data.
HR Sal asks, what kind of format is the Silverlight 5 3D model?
I think they might be referring to what kind of models can you load. And
what kind of models are supported, I think, is the basic question.
I don't know all the models. I'll put you up front, but I know that in particular we used some of those popular ones, like the Collada model, which DAE format, like Pina Collada.
So, is it PAE?
Like Pina Collada, it's actually called...
No, what's the extension format?
DAE.
DAE, okay.
As in Dan...
AE.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So that's one of them.
Do you happen to know any others, or...?
I don't know them off the top of my head. I know that there were several we could have chosen for the demos that we used, but we just happened to use the Collada ones.
Okay. And we can tweet afterwards with the official supported list.
Yeah, and when we release that code, which should be, it might be next week, but I'm saying later this month for that, there's actually some nice APIs in there that our partners at Archetype use and wrote for us. It's not just an application in there. There's actually libraries to load in different models. So you can see the code in there. It says load the model of type Collada. They actually wrote this wrapper for us to make it easier to load models.
Awesome. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And you said that it was a couple weeks?
Yeah, the code's pretty much ready. We just need to edit it, put together a white paper, and we're good to go.
All right, just making sure I'm holding you down to real dates.
End of the month, yes.
TIG66208 asks, how can I write WP7 apps against my existing WCF services that use forms auth cookies not created with membership provider? So this is... forms auth cookies. I'm sending a request to a WCF service for authentication with membership provider.
Well, I think it's without a membership provider. The forms auth cookie in ASP.NET.
Not created with membership provider.
Right, without one.
But yeah, the forms auth cookie in ASP.NET doesn't actually have a dependency on the membership provider.
Okay.
Membership and forms authentication are actually two separate subsystems. They typically are used together, but you don't have to. So if you can get a forms auth cookie, so if you have like an authentication API you call and ASP.NET sends you back the forms auth cookie, you should be able to take that and call any WCF service and pass it along.
Yeah, and I've seen something I think similar with applications like Facebook where instead of calling the service directly, you actually have a browser in your WP7 app that does the authentication. Now you size that down and then you can read the cookie or whatever information you need to then do the next request. And
that's typically kind of what they call OAuth.
Exactly.
Right. And I've never actually written OAuth code myself, but I know we have some samples on it. Yeah, it's fun.
I've used it before, and I'm not sure I would have described it as fun, but that's...
There's some great open source libraries that make it a lot easier to integrate with OAuth.
That's true. There's definitely libraries for Facebook and Twitter and some of the most popular services that have to use OAuth for that. Okay. Codputer asks... did sockets make it to SL5? Where is our WCF full fidelity integration with SL.
So, that's two questions, though.
Yeah.
Well, Socket's actually made it into SL 3 or 4.
3 or 4, yeah.
They're still in 5.
Yay!
In terms of WCF full fidelity, there are several WCF features coming in Silverlight 5. The WCF itself is huge from a capability perspective, and so we don't have everything in Silverlight 5 by a long stretch, but we have added several WCF nice features in there.
Yeah, it's a common request, and there's definitely stuff coming.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Richard Mathias asks, what improvements are there to typography in SL5 for scenarios where text block and rich text box are not flexible enough?
That's great. I mean, a couple things we're working on. One is the linked text containers. Is that the name of the feature? Basically, you can have like overflow multi-columns, and you can have two different rich text boxes where the text starts here and finishes up on another side to another control.
You sort of like newspaper style? Is that fair? Sort
great
of like
scenario. I think we got a USA Today app that actually uses something like that, we did some pre-work on. So that's one feature. And the typography itself, that we've got some tracking and leading coming out with Silverlight 5 as well, and the type looks a lot better. There's been a lot of improvements.
Yeah, the typography people love those terms, kerning, tracking, leading, all that.
We don't have all of them in the beta. Like, I think one of the things we're excited about is much better text quality. Mm-hmm. That will show up more in the next release.
Okay.
It'll be shown by RTM, but it'll probably show up in the release candidate. So people that are doing A-B comparisons on type quality in the beta, you won't see kind of what the final result will be, but we will have much better type quality by the final release.
Right, and the printing's also another one we mentioned earlier. That's actually not in the beta, it's post-beta.
Yeah. Okay, great. John McBride asks, will registered Windows Phone devs have early access to build like Mango without having to wait for carriers? So I'm a developer. I want to be able to start building on Mango. Do I have to wait for my carrier? Do you all know the answer, or do we put Joe Bill?
I think it's a great question for Joe.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
This is the last time on Channel 9 that he answered the question of when a release would come went well. So yeah, ask him then. Yeah.
I'm actually shocked he's here and wants to be on, but that's why I love him. So more questions. Develonsky asks, Mango ability to upload video directly from the phone. So let's...
I think the new camera API does allow you, I believe, to capture a video stream, in which case you could basically, from an app, you should be able to upload it directly to...
If you had programmatic access to the video, I wouldn't see why you couldn't.
Right.
Just
it might be more if you want to in some cases, too, depending on size of video and connections. And
Well, it depends what's on the video. So.
If there's no video, it didn't happen.
Exactly. MVP Priyank, okay, and we have about 5 more minutes, so we're going to try and get through these questions. Is there a possibility for implementing live smooth streaming using Windows Azure? If yes, then how? If no, by when would it start? So live smooth streaming with Windows Azure.
It's something we're working on. Technically, you can do it. It's, to our point earlier in terms of asking about how do you test things, there's a bunch of kind of diagnostic features that we want to fully integrate into Azure before I'd say necessarily recommend it. Certainly, we are enabling smooth streaming for static content immediately.
Right.
Live, typically, there's some extra heuristics. So it's certainly possible. And so you'll see us enable that fully in the future.
It's a scenario they're looking at and working towards.
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. That Joe G asks, any plans on bringing some of threading improvements, such with the Listbox and Mango to Silverlight 5? So Listbox, a lot of stuff for the nice scrolling that was obviously shown off. What about that stuff moving from phone to Silverlight 5?
There's a couple things there. I don't think I wouldn't say the full stuff they're doing there is moving over to Silverlight 5, but there's definitely some Listbox improvements that I've already seen over in Silverlight 5 for perf.
Some of the we kind of took user input off of the UI thread for Mango. I can't remember whether that's made it into Silverlight 5 or not.
Okay.
It certainly will show up at some point, but I can't remember if that's been checked in. It's more critical on a low-end device, like an ARM chip.
That's when you feel it.
That's when you typically feel it, because today with Windows Phone 7, you've got about 16 milliseconds for each cell that you can actually do work on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the absence of profiler, it's really hard to figure out how many milliseconds you're consuming on the CPU. But that's typically when we see the contention problems show up, which is why we did it first on Mango. And I can't remember whether that's checked into Silverlight 5 yet or not.
Okay. All right, well, that was a good question. Ace Spec asks, Will WP7 be updated to use Silverlight 5? So you kind of talked about this as well, but it's kind of a WP7's always following big Silverlight 5, so you have to bake one before you can bake the other. Is that fair? And then it's not always a clear picture because one borrows from the other and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What's the cleanest way you can answer that one?
A lot of it's point in time, and so certainly from a plan perspective, we try to bring every feature that makes sense to the phone as quickly as we can. There are sometimes, if the phone ships sooner or later than a certain release, or even it just ships close to it, there's a bit of coordination that we need to do to make sure that, we don't get into a train situation where every car is connected to the other and any slowdown causes all of them to slow down.
Right.
But certainly aspirationally, you'll see us take a lot of those Silverlight 5 features to the phone as well in the future.
Great, great. And Al asks, what about the full .NET framework, XAML debugging, XNA integration? So XAML debugging, absolutely, positively love it, especially when you're building MVVM and you're doing so much on the binding side. What's the answer?
We don't know yet. We're working on it. Yeah, no, we're working on it.
So close.
We do actually use a fairly agile model, and so, we've got 18,000 features to implement, assuming we can get time, we'll do it. But we're not promising just yet until we know for sure we can do it.
Okay, so
it'd be great to have.
Yes, it would.
I think everyone loves it, and we'll leave it at that. Feedback taken. So Gareth IW asks, WP7 sockets. Can we use a connection established in an app in user agents? Example, connecting to IRC server, update live tiles with messages. Can we use a connection established in an app in user agents?
I don't know, actually.
No, I'm not sure, honestly, with that. I was thinking back to the app that they put together for the IRC, and I don't remember if that ever came up. But we could certainly find out. Send us an email, and we could certainly find out.
Okay. I love it when you guys get stumped. It happens rarely, but Soulless Suite again. Does it also support Collada animations?
I'm going to say I believe it does, but there's a guy we have on later today at 2:30. His name is Luigi Rosso, and he's the guy who helped us put the 3D application together, and he knows much more about that than I do, so I'm going to defer that to him.
Okay, and I think we're basically out of time. So last thing for folks, you mentioned follow-up stuff. Mm-hmm. What's your Twitter, blog? Get out there for people that aren't following you by chance.
Yes, if you're not following us, I'm at John_Papa, and everybody knows what Scott is.
At Scott Goo.
Okay, excellent. And thank you, Scott, John, for a wonderful session, and thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.